You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette and Jim. Is Lizette here? Is she not? Can you see her? Maybe you can, maybe you can't. Is she here? Today, we will be talking about threshold and the brain. What does that mean? Threshold. There's a concept in science and perception that you have to have a certain level of stimulus difference in order to perceive something has changed. We can talk about sight, visual stimulus, hearing, levels of sound, levels of frequency, touch, a difference between a soft touch and what's that next touch where it's a different pressure, temperature, when do we feel the temperature change? If we talked about smell, when we notice a smell. All these things have certain thresholds between where they become obvious differences and we perceive no difference at all. Like, do we hear something or do we not? Do we hear a difference in what we hear or is it the same that we were hearing before? This becomes important when we are trying to determine what we need to see, hear, smell, taste that will make us go, oh, that's different. And why do we have these thresholds? Later on, we'll talk about that. But off the bat, we limit the ability to perceive differences. When I say we do, our brain does, our body does, because otherwise we'd be overwhelmed with all these varying things happening all the time. As soon as a sound changed a little bit, we'd be paying attention. As soon as a little bit of light difference, we'd be paying attention. We'd be distracted all the time. We'd be like, all of us have ADHD, not just me. These things are brain sense interactions that help us and help guide us and help limit what we need to interact with so we really focus on the things that are important. And if you look at evolutionary biology or psychology, the things that have developed in our bodies have done so in order to help us survive. So this limiting threshold that I'm talking about right now, like can you see Lizette or not, is a matter of survival. We've developed these functions and these threshold limits in order to help us get on with our lives, to continue to live. We'll go into one specifically. This is one of my nearest and dearest ones. It has to do with, let's go on to the slide here. Specifically, when looking through glass, we're looking at a mirror, but looking through glass, when does a reflection become noticeable? This is important because in one of the fields that I work, it has to do with glass. People want glass to protect them from the weather, protect them from temperature differences, protect them from maybe people on the outside, dogs, or if you're at a zoo, maybe they want to keep gorillas and lions and tigers and bears away from the people who are visiting the zoo. But what they don't want to do is distract the people looking at these animals or looking at artwork in a museum or say you're in a radio studio and you have somebody on the other side of the glass talking to you. You want to be able to see them clearly. So a lot of times that's done by having certain lighting conditions on one side versus the other side to minimize reflections off the glass. There's also something called anti-reflection glass. It has special coatings on the outer surfaces to make a smooth transition between the differences in the indexes of refraction. So a reflection comes when you have different materials that have different indexes of refraction, such as glass is like 1.5, 1.6 in comparison to air, which is the unit of one. So air has a unit of one, and as light goes through a substance other than air, water, glass, plastic, there's a what they call index of refraction. It has something to do with the propagation of the wave through that new material. And when there's a dissimilar index of refraction, there is a reflection of the wave that's hitting that surface. Okay, so what does this have to do with threshold? The amount of that reflection coming back, when it gets to be a certain amount, we see it. There can be reflections that are so low that we don't see it. That's called below the threshold. There is an approximate number of about 0.5% to 1% of reflection. That means the light that's hitting, reflecting back at us, that when we see that level, in contrast and comparison to what's through the glass, that we see that reflection. Today we're going to talk about that. Let's continue on. When do we notice something? Well, what are we talking about specifically? In reflections, we're talking about contrast and color. It's simply a matter of contrast and color. What is contrast? Let's look at contrast as being differences in light level. Just specifically, is something brighter or less bright? You have those settings on your iPhone, on your cameras, on your different things where you can set contrast. You can do it on your TV. It changes the levels between the black and the white, the brightness and the darkness. So you can have more contrast, which means there's higher differences, or less contrast. But contrast, if there's not enough contrast difference between one thing and another thing, you don't see where the two objects meet. So if you have something that is on top of a black background and it's very, very dark at its edges, you may not see its edge until the contrast is enough where you can see that edge. So again, contrast is, does it contrast in brightness to something that's beyond it? Color is simply, when is a blue and a light blue different enough that you can tell the difference between those two colors? So if you put two colors again next to each other, this blue becomes a different shade of blue. It can become lighter or darker, which is more of a contrast item. If none of the underlying frequencies change, which is a pigment relationship, if the frequencies change, now we're talking about color. So if we add a little bit of green to the blue, when does that blue become green enough that now it doesn't look like that original blue? That is color differences. And when it reaches a threshold level, that's when we notice that there is a color difference between two objects side by side. For some people, they can really differentiate between slightly different colors and slightly different contrasts, and others take a little bit more time. But there is a general range through studies that have been done for nearly 150 years, actually more. The first study we're going to talk about was done in 1860. Let's look at that. So change. In order to see these things, we have to see a change in color, a change in contrast from whatever their original scene. So if we're looking through glass and we're looking at something, if there's a change in color or a change in contrast on the surface of the glass due to reflections, and it can be reflections of something that's on our side of the glass, where that reflection has enough color or contrast difference between what we're seeing through the glass that we notice there's something in front of us and there's a reflection. I don't know how many of you have walked into a store or walked into a glass door in a store or at your house accidentally. You've heard, you know, kids go running into a glass door at the sliding glass door. They run into the glass because they don't see it. Birds, they do that all the time. They fly right into windows because they don't see glass. They have no natural knowledge that glass exists. They just see an open space, they fly towards it. Or they see a high reflection, they see a reflection of the background of the trees behind the glass on the side they're on, and they fly towards that tree, which is actually the reflection in the glass. Could do a whole nother program strictly on birds and what they see and how glass is reflective and how it's dangerous and how we can make better glass. That's a different subject. Let's continue on with this. In 1860, there was something called the candle experiment. They didn't have the scientific equipment that we have today. They didn't have the laboratories. They didn't have all the science personnel who could come up with all these unique electronic items for doing these tests. But what they did have were candles. And you could have a candle and another candle that were almost exactly the same, say, same size wick, same amount of wax, same type of wax, same candle holder. And you could have two candles that kind of burn with the same brightness. So let's look at what that candle experiment is. Basically, a candle, when it lights, the flame produces light at its center, very bright light, and then it spreads out. It spreads out in a sphere, because when you have a point source of light, it spreads out in a sphere. The light in that sphere goes and casts light onto the walls, but it also casts shadows onto the walls. Any objects that are between that light source and the wall get shadows, you know, like wavering shadows. When you've had candles or maybe gone to camp or you've been at a fire, you see the waving shadows on the wall. Well, when they would see these shadows on the wall, they would be like, oh, this is interesting. How can I use this to understand threshold better? Well, they came along with this idea that if I took a second candle, and hopefully this thing works here, there we go. You have two candles. One candle has a rod in front of it. The rod casts a shadow on the wall. The second candle, when brought closer and closer and closer to the shadow, suddenly cast enough light on the wall that the shadow was no longer visible. So they'd have the one candle casting a shadow on the wall, and then they'd light the second candle and slowly walk between the rod and the wall and come to a point where you would no longer see the shadow on the wall. This was where, quote, threshold was. I don't see the shadow. I know this first candle is still casting a shadow, but I've got enough light from the second candle that those contrasts between the shadow and the lit wall has been reduced enough that I can no longer perceive where the edge of that shadow of the rod is. This was done for hundreds and hundreds of people for a long period of time, and they came up with a distance that was the beginning where people stop seeing the shadow. That distance happened to be, and let's go to that next slide, 10 times the distance. The second candle had to be 10 times closer to the wall. So if the first candle was 10 feet away with the rod in front of it, the second candle had to be 1 foot away from the wall. And in light traveling the way it does from a candle, 10 times the distance, meaning 1 foot away and 10 feet away from the wall, that one that was 1 foot away had 100 times the intensity of light on the wall than the one that was 10 feet away. Or the other way around, the one that was 10 feet away had 1% of the intensity of the one towards the wall. So 100 times the intensity of this one, or this one had 1% of the intensity of that one. The shadow then, therefore, at a 1% level was where people stopped seeing it. It became the top level of minimum needed for everybody to see a shadow. The threshold became 1%. At 1%, people saw the shadow. So as that second candle moved from 1 foot to 2 feet away from the wall, as soon as it was moved away from that 1% range and moved into 2%, 3%, allowing 3% shadow, everybody saw the shadow. When it hit 1%, people stopped seeing the shadow. By the time it got to 0.5%, nobody saw the shadow anymore. Even though it's still there, physically we know it's there, but perceptively, if that's a word, I don't know, but from perception, human perception, they could not distinguish. They could not point on the wall where the shadow was. So this became the basis of threshold back in 1860. When we're looking at light and threshold and contrast, we're really focusing on the rods of the eyes. The rods are what perceives light and dark. It's like when we are seeing at night and we get night vision and we start losing our color vision, but we see at night, the wavelength of that frequency of light is focused at 500 nanometer. Well, what does that mean? Well, we'll get into wavelengths, visible light, and what all that means. But 500 nanometers is almost in the center of human vision. We see from 400 to 700 nanometer wavelengths. You know, you talk about ultraviolet or violet all the way up to red and going into infrared, that there's this range of red through violet that we see with our eyes. And right in the middle somewhere, 500 nanometers is almost the average. It's right in almost the highest peak of what we see altogether of all colors and brightness. So we'll go into that in a minute. Why this is important is that we lose color perceptivity at very low light levels, but our rods, which focus in on this frequency, and they vibrate. It's almost like when you play a note on a piano and it's really loud and someone's got a guitar nearby, if they hit the same note as one of the strings on the string on the guitar starts vibrating. And so it becomes, what do they call that? Not synchrony, but it's like it's a common frequency. This frequency being at this rate triggers this one, which is the same frequency. Well, our rods, when they have a certain wavelength of light, they start vibrating. That is picked up by our brain. The light has to have enough change because we've got all these tons and tons of rods. I forgot the count, but we have all these rods and each rod picks up a different edge of the shadow, beginning of the shadow. We have, you know, this, what do we call it? Almost like resolution of our eye. And the ability to pick out edges of things have to do with the resolution, right? So we've got our cones, which are the color perceptors. We have our rods, which are black and white or light perceptors. They have a certain density, which allow a certain amount of a, quote, edge to be seen or difference in things, and also that threshold. That one cone or one rod next to the next rod has to have enough difference where those cones or rods say, ooh, and give information to your brain that say, that's enough of a difference to notice a difference. When we come back on 90 Day Soulmate, we'll get more into this, more into color theory, more into color perception on the idea of threshold, the brain, and what that means to you.
How to Find Your Perfect Match in 90 Days by Lizette Guevara and James Gulmick. Actually, Jim Gulmick.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate. Today we're talking about threshold, the level of input that we need to understand a difference in levels of light, sight, smell, taste, touch, and what that means to a human being and what that means to you and me. We've been talking about light. We talked about contrast. Here's an example, and I hope this comes out well on your screen, and if you don't see it, the upper bar is 0 to 10% contrast difference in light levels of light on black. So down by zero, it looks almost like the same color, and then by 10%, you can all tell that it's got a white bar there, or it's a lighter bar. And then below, there's a bar that goes from 0% to 2% difference. And very easily, by the time you get to that half to 1%, at least from my standpoint with my computer, I can tell that there is a edge to where the dark part of the slide is to where the light part of the slide is. This is a representation. It's not meant to be accurate. It's meant to give you an idea of, as it gets down to zero, we're not gonna see the difference. As we get to a half a percent, we start to see the difference. And by the time we get to 1% threshold or difference in contrast, we should all be able to see the difference. If you can't on your screen, it's because my computer plugged into the mixer put on video, on your screen. There's so many iterations digitally of this phenomena that it either shows you nothing or it overshows you what I'm trying to show you. But in any case, let me move away from that. The idea of that is what we're talking about in contrast, a little bit of light-dark difference to know that there is a difference between things. Now, we're not just talking about difference between black and white, because something may already start off as gray. So once it's gray, how much darker or how much lighter does it have to get in order to see a difference in edge or in contrast? And so we're not talking about extreme dark, extreme white, or extreme black, extreme white, and then moving away from that. We're talking about all these areas of gray, especially when we're looking through glass. Many of the things we see on the other side of the glass, we're looking into a store. You see all the packages, you see clothing, you see whatever they're selling on the other side. Maybe you're walking past an automobile dealership and you're looking at cars. Again, you're not looking at a black view, a black scene, or a white scene. You're looking at a varying and mixed scene of colors and different darknesses and lightnesses. And from the outside looking in, you see the glass you're looking through because of what's reflecting off the glass behind you. If there was nothing to reflect off the glass from behind you, you wouldn't see the glass. Take, for instance, looking at or into a store at night. It's very difficult to see the glass when you're looking at night unless there's street lighting reflecting off the front face of the glass. Let's move into a couple of these other ideas here. We talked about black and white or contrast in our eye, the ability to tell when something's lighter or darker. Let's talk about the cones in our eyes. Generally speaking, and these are generally accepted ranges, that we have three cones in our eyes. We have a one that's a blue. I'm going to talk about color cones. I'm not going to give them their scientific names. The blue cone is its central wavelength that it vibrates at and picks up frequencies is 435 nanometers. Just think of a meter. Think of a millimeter, and then think of a smaller and smaller, like you've got nanometer, micrometer, millimeter, you've got all these things. So 435 is just a measurement of a wavelength, which is pretty small. But when it resonates at that wavelength, that's when we see or see blue. It can be to both sides of that and will pick up more or less. So it's not an exact, it's just a peak frequency that we pick up. The green cone, its center peak wavelength for resonating is 535 nanometers, and the red cone is 565 nanometers. Well, what does that mean as far as the spectrum are concerned? The color spectrum is actually continuous. We only see these three wavelengths, and we perceive colors as we perceive them, based upon how our brain takes in those three inputs and converts them into some kind of visual image in our brain. That the color, when they say the colors, there are more colors. There, if you had more cones, you would see more nuances of colors than what we determine are those colors in our mind. For instance, if you had, you know, this is hard to say because I'm trying to explain and display something in a way that you can't actually perceive it. This is the color spectrum that goes from, and I'm going to use the 400 nanometers, which is down by that violet, really dark violet, that goes through the blue, the green, the yellow, the orange, the red, up to the really deep red, up in that 650 to 700 nanometer wavelength. So again, just picture this as a musical instrument. You have your very short wavelengths, which are your high frequencies, which are your violets, which would be your really, really high notes. They have a lot of energy. That's why ultraviolet, and as you get to shorter wavelengths, you get into your what are they, microwaves? What are they called? Excuse me here for a minute. The X-rays, and those things are really, really short wavelengths. Gamma rays, they're down past the violet and ultraviolet, and then the other side is the reds, and that's when you get your infrared, you get your heat energy at that point. It's electromagnetic radiation, but it's such long wavelength, we don't see it, but we feel the temperature of it. So anyway, the color spectrum from the violets through the reds is what we're talking about. An interesting thing that we're going to get into when we get into pigments and other things, that it's almost like a circular thing. If you look at the violet and the red, that a lot of pigments that have red or violet in them also have the other, meaning that because the frequency is almost a harmonic, meaning you've got 400 nanometer and 700 nanometer, at some point you get something that's a double frequency, meaning if the wavelength is half, that means the frequency is double. Don't want to overwhelm us all here, but if you're looking at, say, 375 and you double that, that becomes what, 750? So 375 and 750 are basically things that would resonate very well with each other. You'll find that with colors as well, pigments as well, is that a lot of them overlap from one color end to the other. If we're looking at our cones in our eyes, this is where we are seeing all the colors. These three cones that resonate at these frequencies somehow take all that information that we see in our world and give us what we believe is the full spectrum. But we're only seeing part of the spectrum and we're interpolating the rest of it. In fact, I bet you, we don't see the rest of it. For instance, birds have a fourth cone in their eye, which is, I believe, in the area of about 350 nanometers, maybe 350, 380 nanometers. It is a shorter wavelength that we don't see that well, or we don't see at all. So when birds see, they can see these UV wavelengths that we don't. It's just another color for them. They see it as a light source. They don't see it as, like, we don't see it, so it's dark to us. To them, it resonates and they see it as a light source. It brings out more nuances to the things they're seeing. Maybe they can tell if a flower is ready to be eaten, or maybe they can tell if that's a bug, that something that they want to consume, or there's things that they see that we don't see. And because of that, we understand that we look at visible colors as things that are visible to us. So this infrared spectrum, or should I say this spectrum of things from UV to infrared, maybe other creatures can see. If it's another creature from another world, maybe they can see something that we can't. If you were to look at pigments, and let's go to some pigments here. Let's click on here and go to some pigments. So I did a spectrophotometer, spectro being the spectrum, the actual visual spectrum, photometer, taking light, white light, shining it at an object, and meter, measuring what's resonating off that color, gives us an output across wavelengths of different pigments. So there's multiple lines on here, but if you pick any single line, just pick one of those red lines there, and you'll see that there's a little bit of a peak of what's coming off down in the violet range, then it drops to very little in the middle, whereas the blue and the green and the yellow, and then it comes back up in that red range, that 600 and higher nanometers. So what's actually happening is there's a much, that 600 and higher, longer wavelength range, there's a lot more radiating out of that wavelength. And that's not even a wavelength which our eyes perceive. So if we go to where our eyes perceive, we're down there in that 565 and we're seeing red, right? We're seeing red, but that pigment's really, really giving off a lot more wavelength in that 600, 650 nanometer wavelength than what we can perceive with our eyes. So we are seeing what we see, and the colors are just, you know, what are they, just kind of made up stuff? You know, so we have what we believe are colors. So why this, and why we're going over this, is because when we talk about differences in colors, We are going back to threshold in differences in colors. And let's see what we got here. I want you to do an experiment with me. This is seeing what happens when you trigger one set of your cones. That we're going from black. So we're going to go to the screen here. Bear with me. Tell me if you what you see or think about what you see when you see this. Stare at your screen and go from here, a black, to a red. If things worked well, you should have felt something happen in your eyes. You should have felt a light sensory in your eyes. Now, going back to black, getting used to it, seeing the black, and now, boom, you'll see your eyes, feel your eyes adjust as you see the green, if this screen is big enough for you. We're going to do the same thing here. We're going to go back to black, get used to looking at the black screen again for a second, and now we're going to go to blue. You'll feel that something has happened here. And what that is that we're triggering a specific set of cones uniquely. We're triggering the red, the blue, or the green set of cones and not the others. That as we go from black to that trigger, we're getting our eyes to adjust to that, like, oh, here's light, but only having one color cone be triggered, or at least we're trying to focus on the one color. I'm sure we're getting others because you have all the other stuff in your background in the room, wherever you are. However, what I want to look at is that every time that we went from black to a color, we felt light coming into our eyes, that our eyes had to adjust to the new brightness level. If we do that same experiment, but we go from white, let's see what happens. Stare at the white. And in 3, 2, 1, we'll go to red. We're going to do the same thing again. Let's go back to white. And now we'll go to green. From green to white. And from white to blue. What I hope you noticed was that white was actually brighter than all those colors. And when we went to that color, our eyes, what was that going to be called? Our eyes had to adjust to a little bit less of a color, but it was just basically shutting off the resonance frequencies to the other cones. It was not going from no cones to a color. It was going from all cones to only that color cone. Just showing you that going from white to a color is... the color is a subset of the white. Just like when you go from black to any color, the color is being triggered by itself. It's very interesting, very fun. And when we come back, we're going to do a little bit more color experimentation in the essence of threshold to understand why we can only see 0.5% threshold and above. And when it's below 0.5, we don't see anything. It's like it's not there, especially when it comes to glass and reflections. If you don't see it, it doesn't exist. We'll be back right after this message.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette, who's not here, or invisible, and Jim. Today we're talking about threshold, we're talking about color, we're talking about contrast, and why when we see or don't see a reflection, what that means to us, as well as what that means to all of our senses, that there has to be a certain level of difference between the status quo and this new thing for us to actually see it, hear it, smell it, taste it, touch it. Let's get into the colors that we were talking about just a second ago. I want to move back and just refresh what we just did here. We went from black to the red cone, back to black, shutting off our cones, to the green cone being triggered, black again, blue cone being triggered, back again. So now everything's off. Let's go to white. So now all of our cones are triggered, as well as our rods, go to red. That should have been downward color, right? So now we're only on red. Now we're back to white. All of our cones and rods are triggered. Now only green cones. White, bright. Blue cones only. White, bright again. Back to the black. And now we're going to go through all of them. So now watch the. This is what I find funny. If we go from red to green, I don't know if you felt that, but you'll feel your eyes adjust. Because when you go from a color, when you go from a color to another color, you are increasing the brightness in those cones that have not been triggered. So it can be that your eyes continuously are adjusting to brightness differences, even though the brightness is an equivalent brightness. It's a basically going from no color in those rods, I'm sorry, in those cones, no colors in those cones, to color in those cones, the cones being off to on. And we're kind of getting used to triggering the red, the green, the blue separately to understand that we actually can feel that. Let's go into this last section here on color theory. RGB, red, green, blue versus CMYK. CMYK stands for cyan, magenta, yellow, and black. In color theory, there are such things as additive and subtractive colors. So when you are taking light and you add light together, you are now doing additive of light, which means you're going from, for instance, RGB is an additive system. If you add, if you look at our chart here, you add red and green together of red LEDs and green LEDs, and what you end up with is yellow. So when you add red and green together, you get yellow. So if you look at here, these are the RGB settings that you would be using to setting colors in PowerPoint and Office, different variations. When you are setting colors, I'm just going zero on full at 255 or off full at zero, just to show the extremes. Again, red is only 255 of red, zero green, zero blue. And green is 255 of green, zero red, zero blue. Blue is 255 of blue, zero red, zero green. Makes sense. When we get to yellow, since RGB is additive, is we're adding light together. This is how our TVs work, our monitors work. We are adding red and green LEDs to get yellow. It looks like yellow. Is it really yellow? If it appears to be yellow, is it yellow? We are fooled into thinking it's yellow, but it's actually red and green. We're not seeing yellow when we see yellow on our TV. We're going to show you that in a minute. It really blew my mind the first time I saw it. When we want to get magenta, we put red and blue LEDs together and get magenta. And then lastly, when we want cyan, you take green and blue together, get cyan. Well, what does this mean? It's meaning we're mixing light. It's not we're mixing color. We're not taking paint. Paint would be literally the opposite. If you took cyan and magenta, those two bottom colors, let me go back to this, and I'm sorry I didn't have this on the screen, is that if you took the two bottom colors in paint, you took magenta and cyan, and you added them together. And if you added them together, they're called subtractive colors, because there is no green in magenta and there's no red in cyan. When you add them together, those two colors are washed out and all you are left with is blue. When you mix paint, cyan and magenta become blue. The only thing left is blue. This is probably color theory 101, maybe it's 102, who knows. Let's continue on with that. So what we want to know is RGB and CMYK, is it addition or subtraction? If we're dealing with light and differences in light, we're dealing with addition. If we're looking at differences in paint, we're looking at subtraction and wavelengths. Let's go on to the next slide here. So this is how these two color theories exist. When I say theories, one's light and one's paint. If you look on the outside of this diagram, you've got your cyan, your yellow, your magenta. Where they cross over, where you have magenta and cyan, and think of those again, those are paints or inks. When you mix cyan and magenta together and get blue, it's because that's the only thing that exists in both of those colors. The other, since they're subtractive, it takes away what's being taken away in cyan and magenta. Same with magenta, yellow, you get red. Well, how do I take lights like red and green and get yellow? Well, if I put the lights close enough together and put a lot of them, the green and red lights fool our eyes into seeing yellow because it triggers what we believe is a yellow response. Same with blue, red, same with blue, green. That we get what we perceive as being a color that really isn't there. And here is an example that I hope will show up on your monitor. If you take blue and green, little green squares in blue right next to it, and you put them really, really, really tight together. So the big diagram with the big green squares that you can see is the same actual set of colors on the other diagram, which is supposed to represent cyan. That when you have blue and green together, you end up with this cyan color because we're fooling the eyes by having green LEDs and blue LEDs really close together. And then when they are so close together, our eyes can't tell the difference. Our cones get triggered so close together with both the green and the blue that we think we're seeing cyan. Let's go to the next one, which is, let's do that for blue and red. You put blue and red really, really close together and you see what looks like magenta. Is that what you're seeing there? Magenta. Now let's look at this last one, which I hope comes out across well. It doesn't look so great on my monitor, but it's when you mix red and green together, the color should start approaching yellow. It looks a little gold mustardy on my screen here. But if you're understanding, that actually isn't the color that... So the colors that you're seeing in the upper left-hand corner, again, we're going to go through. The cyan you're seeing there has no cyan in it. It's only blue and green. The next one of magenta is only blue and red, but it looks like magenta to me. And finally, the final one here that kind of is starting to look yellow has no yellow in it. It is only green and red LEDs on my screen. Trying to figure out what I did here. So we go from black to cyan to magenta to yellow. Oh, here we go. Ready for this? So if you have your LEDs, your red, your green, and blue, and you put them really close together, if you stare at your screen right now, I hope this works. But what happens to, you know, what's supposed to happen is you're supposed to see something that is white, or at least you looks like there's some white in there. And if I stop this thing from spinning, stop it from spinning, there is no white. In fact, I think you might have seen yellow in there too. There's no yellow. But when your eyes are triggered, when your eyes are triggered that rapidly, you're seeing a color that's not there. When you have LEDs that are really, really close together and they show you red and green together or red and blue together, you're seeing a color that actually isn't on the screen. If you get really, really close to your screen, you can see, and this goes to your TV more so, the LED TVs, if you get a magnifying glass, you'll see tiny, 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 tiny little dots of only three colors. And it's white when all three of them are on, the red, green, blue, and it's black when all three are off, and then it's all other colors when they're in proportion to each other. It's an amazing thing how we fool our eyes and our mind into seeing something that's not there. So when it comes to color, how much of a color difference do we need to understand that it's a different color? Well, when it comes to green and red, studies have shown that at 0.44% and 0.69% for green and red, that's the only amount of color difference we need to see when we can tell a color apart. And I can tell you from color matching for many, many years, it's actually true. We can also almost see like a 0.2, 0.3% when it comes to, is it white or is it an off-white? When you have shades of white and it's so white, you can tell those colors a little different. The interesting thing is when you have a color that you really can't tell, like a white that's an off-white, and you don't know, is it a little blue, is it a little green, is it a little yellow? When you put something next to it that has or doesn't have the color that's in the white, it can make it look ugly or it can make it look really nice when those underlying pigments actually match. When you're matching colors, having underlying pigments that have the same pigments but in different quantities can make things look really, really good together. But then again, going back to this, we do not see things if the contrast is less than 0.44%. We don't see differences in color, which means if we're looking through glass, we don't see a difference in reflection. If the reflective thing from behind us is less than 0.5% of contrast and less than 0.5% approximately of color difference, we will not see the glass because we don't see a contrast or color difference with what is beyond the glass. And that is the goal of anti-reflective glass, is to not have enough contrast or color difference because of a reflection to see the glass. And it doesn't have to be absolutely anti-reflective. You just have to get down to 0.5% to 1%, depending on lighting situations, and you don't actually see the glass. So again, 0.5% on color, 1% on contrast. Below these limits, a difference is not perceived. If it's not perceived, you don't see it. It doesn't exist. A couple of examples here, and I'll just do one example because this may not show up well on your computer. But there are three pieces of large glass in front of these smaller pieces of glass. There is one in the center of the screen, which is nearly imperceivable because the colors behind it don't change much, and there's hardly, if any, reflection off it. We'll keep going here. So contrast or color, zoomed in, you see reflections off the first piece of glass on the left. Off the piece of glass on the right, you see reflections. In the middle, you see reflections of light. That's ceiling light reflecting off the glass, but you do not see reflections of the general environment. And I don't know if you see the glossiness of the one on the right and left and the lack of glossiness on the one in the center, but those are three pieces of glass. In that circle there is the light that's behind the photographer. When you see the shadow of the photographer or the reflection, that's in the center of the centerpiece, that is the reflection off the piece of glass behind the glass that's in front of it. And you can see the photographer in that circle there where you can't see the photographer in the center one. Get ready for your close-up. Again, when you zoom in, you can actually see the outline silhouette image of the photographer on the glass on the left, on the glass on the right, but it is imperceivable in the one in the center. Anti-reflective glass has high color resolution or rendering index, meaning the colors aren't changed through it as well. You don't get a color reflection off the surface or a contrast reflection off the surface that allow you to see the glass itself. The blue dress, that's a whole other story, but it has to do with how colors look like other colors when they're next to certain colors and look like different colors in a different situation. If you think it's nighttime or daytime, your eyes, your brain, everything can be, you can be fooled quite easily into thinking things are colors that aren't. In whatever this is called, in summary, that there's a threshold, that we've shown that there's a threshold of about 0.5% for color and about 1% for contrast in being able to see the difference between things, which leads us to being able to see reflections in glass. We don't, that's a threshold for sight. The same 0.5% holds true in smell. in touch, in taste, in hearing, who knows what else. But there is this threshold that doesn't, we do not notice something when it's below that threshold difference. Why? Perhaps it's to limit the input to our brain, reduce our awareness of things that are unneeded, save processing needs of our brain, ignore unnecessary information, allow monitoring of the status quo for us to only have to worry about things that are different in order to survive. Know that threshold is a good thing, but it does limit our ability to see, hear, smell, taste, and touch things and notice differences that are there but are imperceived. Thank you for watching 90 Day Soulmate with Jim and Lizette. If she was perceived by you, appreciate it. Have a great week.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.